Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning. Today my guest is Jean-Do Massaero, an Alexander Technique teacher who lives in Montpellier, France. We've been doing a series of interviews on the influence of François Delsarte, his younger brother Camille Delsarte, on Alexander and the Alexander Technique. And without going into detail, because we've covered this a lot in the earlier podcasts in the sequence, it's pretty clear that Alexander was very strongly influenced by Delsarte as he was making his initial discoveries and doing his initial teaching. We know that Alexander promoted himself as a Delsarte method teacher in Australia. We have that absolutely established. And we're going to talk to, we've talked about sort of the history of Alexander's teaching and how it evolved and what, and a kind of a critical moment around 1914 when he moved from using Delsarte's methods and his own directions to more hands-on work. And Jean-Do is going to talk about his take on the dilemma Alexander faced in 1914, and then, and how, what's kind of come out of all that at the end, like in the 21st century, and how he uses Skype to teach, obviously not using hands-on, but in a very different way than I use Skype, which was a our previous podcast. So, Jean-Do, welcome to the show.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you.
So, could you give your sense of the big overview question of Alexander's shift into hands-on? What preceded it? Why he may have done that? What the effects of that are on the technique? Very, very brief. And then we want to get into your what you're doing with Skype.
Yeah. I need an introduction. Everything I'm going to say is under is because I studied the books of Alexander, and I found that the books, the first three books, for example, are very, very much influenced by Delsarte thinking. Mm-hmm. Much more than I thought, mm-hmm. and as a result, I do understand Delsarte in a different way than most Delsartean nowadays, because mm-hmm. I'm Alexander's student, you know, because mm-hmm. I study his books. So
and you trained to be an Alexander teacher, right? I mean, you're the real deal,
oh, yeah,
Alexander
I'm a stat
wise,
trait.
Right?
Yeah.
You're stat, yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. So, okay.
Yes, I did. I started using hands-on for the first 10 years of my teaching. Yes, of course.
Right.
And so I have a different view on it. So let me give you my view. Mm-hmm. Alexander is quite clear in his books that what he called the direction that he used. I will just say, let the neck be free, to let the head go forward and up, to let the back lengthen and widen. And there are more than this. But it's quite clear in different occasions that these are ends. These are not means. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he certainly didn't have any problem to show us what was the end result of the readjustment he was proposing.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he proposed the readjustment as something that the pupil should learn how to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, there was this problem with the means whereby, because the people started to mistake the directions for the means whereby. And that started to become a real problem. That's people started to think that freeing the neck, for example, was the means whereby of the problem. But it's that he was suddenly stuck. He didn't know how to solve it. So in order to solve it, he changed from the Delsar that is really into action-bound thinking and no perceptual thinking at all. He changed into thinking that he could make the student feel or experience the means whereby. Mm-hmm. And if they experience the means whereby through his manipulation, then the students would connect in their mind the, well, and gaining, you would say, instruction, neck, create, forward, and back to lengthen and widen with the real means whereby. Mm-hmm. And that's how he changed his view. And it's quite interesting because nowadays we've got the early versions of the books. And I made a point in comparing the sentences, how they change. For example, the Man Supreme Inheritance of 1910, mm-hmm. if you compare it with a 1917 edition or with a 1946 edition, it's very, very funny to see that Alexander will just let the sentence be as it was, but just add at the end, like a commentary on the need for the teacher to manipulate the student, which was not mm-hmm. present before.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's very funny. It's amazing. That's normally you shouldn't do something like that. Normally you should write a new book and you should state the problem with the first one and explain why you changed. But no, it just added things.
Great.
So my view on this has been, in fact, a consequence of studying the books. In fact, I took every mention of the means whereby, and I tried to see if there were hints in his writings about them. And of course, the books are a gold mine. Mm-hmm. How to readjust, what it is to readjust, what it is that we're looking for. Mm-hmm. And there are, to understand the way I do teach in Skype, there are sentences of Alexander that are fundamental to have in mind. Otherwise, you don't understand what it is about. I was insulted the other day by a gentleman saying to me that what I've done now, what it is like a self or orthopedy, you know? And
What is that word again?
Orthopedic treatment, self-orthopedic treatment.
Oh,
Is it not what you said to me after the lesson?
Self-osteopathic.
Osteopathic, yeah.
That was me who said that. Yeah. I didn't know that. I had insulted you, but whatever.
No, it's fine. Yeah. Fine. I was amazed at the comment. But it's. I can understand that because I'm very, very much interested in the early Alexander technique when it was all about re-education, readjustment and coordination. So it's really what I teach nowadays. Mm-hmm. And so let's go into that. So the specific control of a finger, of the neck or of the legs should primarily be the results of conscious guidance and control of the mechanism of the torso. Mm-hmm. You know? And that is a sentence that Alexander wrote. And that is absolute Delsarte thinking.
I was going to say, that lies at the core of Delsarte's thinking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's at the core of the early Alexander technique too.
Yes.
And it says conscious guidance and control of the mechanism of the torso, particularly of the antagonistic muscular actions, which brings about those correct and greater coordination intended to control the movement of the limbs, neck, respiratory mechanism, and the general activity of the internal organs.
Is that Alexander? That's Alexander, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's Alexander, page 126. So we've here what we call a function. Alexander relates cause and effect, and he says that if there is any undue muscular pull in any part of the neck, it is almost certainly due to the defective coordination in the use of the muscle of the spine, back, and torso generally, the correction of which means the eradication of the real cause of the trouble.
Which
that's Delsarte thinking, but Alexander writing here.
And it's also,
you know?
Yes, and it's also almost, maybe even totally, the opposite of standard Alexander thinking today.
Yes. Yes, but yeah. We are coming from that. It's our origin.
Yeah.
So I said, well, let's go to the origin. So how do you consciously guide and control the mechanism of the torso?
Mm-hmm.
So then you get the torso as an articulated system.
Yeah.
There?
Mm-hmm.
Then you will analyze that system and you will discover that this system has four different parts.
Mm-hmm.
And the first problem that the pupil has to solve is to elicit movements between the parts. Because without knowing it, the pupil has a conception of the postural control that is based on stability. That can be demonstrated very easily. You just ask the pupil to sit in front of his computer, of course, because we are talking about Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to point out how the student is sitting, how that relates to the concept of stability. And it's easy to tell the pupil that concept of stability, maintaining balance by stiffening the shoulder and the different parts of the torso, that is the source of all the problem. The neck is not free because of it. And everything follows that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is necessary to understand the basis of this work. The crucial question is it possible for a student to use his mind, to use his thinking, to direct his will in a rational way in order to change from a conception that is inherited by just subconscious trials and error and imitation of peers or a social posture that mm-hmm. is based on stability? Is it possible for him on his own to somehow change his mind? That's the center of things. And think in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And use that thinking in order to change the way he moves the different parts of the torso where he didn't know there were parts at first. And if you can accept the idea that there are means whereby that can be used in order to lengthen and widen the torso, then the student will be able to lengthen and widen his spine and also to have the head forward and up and the neck free as mm-hmm. a mm-hmm. result of the means, of the mental means he's using. So that is, you have to understand that because this is how I teach. So of course, there are biomechanical understanding behind all this because you have to analyze how would it be possible to get coordinated support from the torso, how it would be possible to direct the different movements. There, you use what we call an action coding system. So that is, I'm going back to Delsarte, of course, because Delsarte is the originator of that idea, mm-hmm. that it is possible to, in fact, create a conception of the movements of the parts of the torso that are required by instructions alone, mm-hmm. as long as the pupil inhibits his perceptual thinking, as mm-hmm. long as he inhibits the fact that he feels very strange, he feels awful, he feels tension, he feels everything mm-hmm. when he is directing his torso in a new way, because that way is not habitual.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the, I wanted just to make a wide description of the why and the wherefore and how I teach in Skype. Well,
right.
In fact,
yeah.
there is no difference in my Skype teaching and in my normal teaching. It's the same thing.
Right. And as someone who has had, I guess we could say, 1.5 lessons with you, one lesson, and then the results were so overpowering. And since I'm about to be traveling, I opted for a second lesson that I could then take with me when I travel, because I don't want to be worn out on my trip. But from my limited experience of what you're doing, you're using a very specific protocol for combining several movements at one time. And it seemed way too complicated to kind of keep track of all that stuff. But in fact, it turns out that especially if you look at a video of yourself trying to do them, listen to how that compares with your instructions, and experiment with a mirror, which I also did, it actually is pretty quick to learn how to do.
Yeah.
And once you learn
happy that you're making that comment.
Yeah, well, and even more importantly, the way you learn it is by doing it quite slowly at first in a very sort of stylistic, I don't say stylistic, but slowly, paced over a period of 6 seconds, for example. But once you've learned it, you can do it pretty much instantaneously. And it is a directed movement or directed rearrangement. It is a very different kind of direction, though, than I think most Alexander teachers would be used to thinking about.
Yeah, it's much more precise in a way.
It's very precise.
It's geometric, and the word we use in order to describe as are very, very clear. Mm-hmm. We can check that the pupil understand really exactly what we mean, because we can use diagrams, we can use every sort of geometric tools in order to make sure that what we convey as the direction of movement of one part is understood by the pupil. And then we discover something, is that even if the pupil understands perfectly the instruction for the different movement of the different parts of the torso that he has to combine as one, because that the center part of this is what we call what Alexander called concerted activity, which means different movements all going their own way there and united into a complete change of posture.
Yes.
So, I there is something I want to add about this.
Yes.
The big difference I found between my old Alexander technique, the one I learned when I was a student in England, and this initial Alexander technique, influenced by Del Sarte, is the fact that from the discovery that a gesture of the whole self is not absolutely correct, then we want to go to a gesture that is reasoned, that is geometrically a position of mechanical advantage. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Yeah.
And what is different is that we want to monitor the change between the old gesture into the new gesture, and we are going to monitor is these antagonistic action of the torso and all these movements in 6 seconds.
Right.
Which means that during these 6 seconds, we are allowed to pull as much as we want, but we have to pull in a reasoned fashion, which means that every movement has to be started and finished simultaneously. So that's a problem for our mind. How with our minds can we direct more than three, four movements? Because up to three movements you can direct it with your perceptual thinking, but your feelings. But if you get to six or like we want to 12 simultaneous movements, then it's absolutely impossible to direct 12 movements with the perceptual thinking. But it is so easy. In fact, we had a limitation. We saw that the pupil or ourselves couldn't really think of many things at once, many very, very clear, defined orders at once and translate them to practical activity. Well, with good, the good news and the magic is that it's absolutely untrue. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely possible for a student in six lessons to master like six or eight movements so that the mechanism of the torso is really consciously directed, you know? Mm-hmm. So, well, of course, you said something that is of great relevance nowadays, is that that changes the business concept of the Alexander technique, which means that instead of trying to keep your student as long as you can, you know, to keep them as much lesson as you can,
right,
which is an economy of poverty. Mm-hmm. You have to change into an economy of wealth, where, in fact, the problem is not to keep the student. The problem is to get the student autonomous as fast as you can.
Yes, exactly.
If that happens, if like... we have a model, you know, in school. Our model is the transmission of the technique from FM to AR, between the two brothers.
Six it's lessons, no hands-on.
Yes, lesson.
No hands-on, right, yeah.
Our business model is based on that. Which the idea is you need six lessons with me to, in fact, be able to work on yourself.
Right, and because and we both have had that same experience. Even the difference is you've gone back to early Alexander, which would from what I understand would be really good Delsarte teaching, as it were. I mean, he was a really good Delsarte teacher.
I think so.
But he did have problems with the directions, and I think that may have led him astray in one sense, although it's tricky. But what, you know, your way of teaching and my way of teaching using Skype are extraordinarily different, but we've both had the experience that students learn very quickly.
Yeah.
If you can give them material they can work on their own, and which is what we're both doing, but we're doing very different things.
I think there is a reason for that. May I explain my view on it?
But I would just caution you, if I might. We're getting pretty close to, we're getting a little past
I will
where
make
we should
it,
be.
I will make an extreme effort to be short.
Excellent.
The point is... the lesson is not the lesson. Is that short enough?
Yeah, exactly. Let me elaborate on it for you. The lesson is whatever it is, an hour or so. I think you typically use an hour. But you send the student the video, you know, the video of the lesson, and the student can record it themselves. And I found that it was in reviewing that, when the session I had with you that I actually implemented, it was in reviewing that everything clicked into place.
Exactly. And so the lesson is not the lesson. It's after the lesson that the pupil is taking it.
Yes, exactly.
Eating it and practicing it. I had the question the other day by a teacher in England, and she said, don't you get that problem that people are not practicing at home?
And not I say, if they're using Skype, because they get away.
Yeah.
It's absolutely clear to the student that they're not going to get any kind of fix from a teacher. They're going to have to work on their own. And what you said about your teaching is exactly the same as mine. I'll teach a student how to use, for example, directions, say two or three specific directions, get them to experiment with it, learn how to test it, but they need to actually practice that on their own. And virtually all of them do.
Yeah.
Because the ones that don't are the ones that don't really want to do any thinking at all, and then they drop out. But that's relatively rare. I think once someone has decided to use Skype, they're going into it knowing that they're not going to get anything for free. You know, they're going to have to do some experimenting on their own.
I want to add something on this because there is a concept that is fundamental to understand. It's, we call it conscious control. It's an invention of Alexander. Mm-hmm. And what it means is that when I say that the lesson is not the lesson, that the pupil is going to start, and you would say, but he's on his own now. How is he going to know if he's going in the right direction or not? Well, mm-hmm. that's where conscious control comes in. Mm-hmm. So we tell the pupil to watch the video, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. after watching the video, to reason on the orders as they were given mm-hmm. and on the projection. Well, I mean, the reflection, mm-hmm. that is mm-hmm. what the person really did in front of the video, in front of the camera, when she used this instruction. And of course, most of the time, it's not exactly what was the project, you know. So there is a discrepancy between the instructions and what the pupil has done. And the pupil can check that and says, okay, that is not exactly what I want. But then we start again. The pupil on his own, in his own home, can start his computer mm-hmm. again and record what happened during the 6 seconds where he's going to work. Mm-hmm. And he will redo this, and that is consciously controlling that the model that was expressed, the means whereby, if you want, that were expressed as geometrical direction of movement, have been really established on the video or not. So the lesson is not the lesson, and conscious control comes from, of course, not the mirrors here, but the camera.
Yeah. And that's there's a rough analogy or a sort of analogy to the way I teach. And I do make a big point of teaching people how to test these directions for themselves.
Yes.
Now, it's a very, very different process than you're using. Does not actually require seeing the video of themselves, but could be useful. But what we both are doing is empowering people and getting them to start, and for what I teach, after they've learned how to use directions, I suggest they start thinking of some new ones themselves.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's not like anyone's got a monopoly on useful directions, and there may be some Del Sartian things they could work on their own too. I don't know, because I haven't gone through your process fully, but... Anyway, maybe this would be a good place to end our conversation. What do you think?
Yeah, that's fine.
Excellent. This has been good. My guest today has been Jean Doe Massaero, an Alexander Technique teacher in Montpellier, France. Thanks so much, Jean Doe.
Yeah, bye from the south of France.
Yeah, excellent.